Welcome to Soft Strength. My name is Aisha Fakhro, and together we'll explore conversations around humanity, holistic wellness, and mental health to expand our perceptions and the way we experience the world. Hi, everyone. Today we're examining mindfulness and being human and mental health from a really fresh and different and I would say unique perspective. This has been one of the most joyful discoveries of my year personally this year. I had the delight and joy of interviewing my friend and teacher, Andrew Kane, who introduced me to acting improv this year and is a phenomenal teacher at creating a safe space for play, connection, exploration, discovery, and finding more choices and getting unstuck and connecting even more deeply with possibilities and potential within us. Improv is one of those practices where instead of learning mindfulness on a cushion, instead of it being serious and introspective, which it can be and which there's nothing wrong with, we get to explore all of those benefits through play and fun and in a relational aspect, which I absolutely love. And so we dive into a lot of that, how to get unstuck, how to expand our potential, find more choice, how to lean into creativity and the nonverbal and humor and so much more. I could go on for an hour just talking about how excited I am about this conversation. I really hope you enjoy this episode. Here is my conversation with Andy. Andy, welcome to the podcast. I'm so happy to have you on.
It's great to be here.
So just for everyone listening, Andy's my improv teacher. I got into improv this summer and absolutely loved it. And I was wondering, Andy, if you would kind of describe what you do. How would you put words to that?
Yeah, what I particularly... this isn't a reflection on you, Aisha, but I particularly try and reach out to people who perhaps tend to get a bit stuck in their heads and overthink things, because that was my background as well. Mm-hmm. And so what I help people do, I always say, is to connect to themselves, connect to each other, and connect to the moment, which is the opposite of that. And that's where improvisation happens.
Mm. And one thing I've really loved about working with you is finding the gold that hides underneath our plans and our thinking and our anticipation of things. There's something about being fully there, like you said, when we connect to each other and ourselves in the moment that just lights up within people, and it's always a delight to watch.
Finally, I've been making, I'm starting to make a list of famous people's quotes about improv. And I thought of one the other day with John Lennon. Improv is what happens while you're busy making other plans, which is a twist, sort of a variation on his thing about life. I think we often feel like we ought to have something, we ought to be different to how we actually are. And in our personal lives, many of us, as a process of growing up, begin to have a kind of a mask and a way we present ourselves to the world. And yet we know that in our real lives, what we love is when someone opens up to us a little bit and we connect. And Brené Brown says vulnerability is something we really like in other people, but really try and avoid in ourselves. And improv plays into that place very nicely, because it is a practice of letting go of all the things you think you should be and allowing what's really there to come out.
Yeah. And if someone listening doesn't really know exactly what improv is, how would you maybe describe that to them?
We all have an experience of what improv is because we all did it as children. We all would naturally have, I don't know, if you were holding a doll's tea party or playing war games or being detectives as children, you're taking on a character, you're being that character, you're pretending other people are the characters that they've adopted, and you're exploring what could happen. So as children, we do it instinctively without thinking about it. What tends to happen as we grow up is we stop doing it, we stop allowing ourselves to do it. And when you see improv performed, it's adults who've got very good at doing that. And perhaps the other side, which for me is just as interesting, is the practice of doing it for its own sake, whether or not there's an audience. So it's making things up together.
Yeah, I always, I was actually just talking to friends about improv a couple of hours ago, like I told you before we recorded. And when they ask me what improv is, I say we kind of show up to play together and we have no idea what's going to come up, but we create it, we co-create it together. And there's just magic in that. And I love your take on the sweet spot being where joy, risk, and skill meet. Can you walk us through that just a bit more and what that's all about?
Yes, I'm going to try and make it not too improv nerdy, if you know what I mean. I think there's a wonderful thing that happens, and I always encourage it in with people who are learning improv with me, is to find this place where joy, skill, and risk meet. That if we, as adults, the most common habit is we tend to drift into thinking, I need to get better at this and become more skillful at it and read lots of books and so on. And what improv teaches us is that if we do that, it can become a little bit dry, a little bit like people being clever. And actually the real joy of doing and watching improv is people who are just outside of their comfort zone. They're a little bit wobbly because they don't quite know what's happening, which is the risk part, and they're joyful in doing it. They're happy about being, putting themselves off balance and then figuring out what to do then.
Yeah, and I feel like the improv shows we've watched with you over the past few months, the ones that were my favorites were the ones where I could tell that they're having an absolute blast and just doing it for themselves more really than for the audience.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the joy is such an important part and one that, yeah, sometimes people lose track of. So I think it's really important to keep that there in the mix.
And I'm thinking of a couple of friends I have who would probably say something along the lines of, why would I even want to do that? Like, why would I do something just for the sake of it? Why would I want to do this just because? So what is your response normally to that kind of question?
Well, isn't that an interesting thing that we grow into an attitude of thinking that we only do something for the sake of something else, to achieve something else, and forget that there's the possibility of doing something for the joy of doing it. And that's actually quite a radical kind of practice sometimes in modern societies where, you know, when people talk about like living for the weekend, I work in my job to earn some money, so then I can do this and then I can do that. And then eventually I can do this. And then 25 years later, I'll be able to buy a big house or whatever. And we're encouraged often to have quite a utilitarian approach to our activities. You know, I run to get fit, or I eat healthily to lose weight, or I do this to do that. And there's a great opportunity to also include things that we do for their own sake.
Yeah, and I find personally that doing things for their own sake always feeds into my other utilitarian activities, if you will. So I find myself more efficient, more effective at the other things I do just because I take some time for fun and to recharge.
Yeah, for sure. And that's the, it's almost the definition of play. And play is a very interesting idea that we've lost track of a lot, I find. That we know about what work is. So work is one thing. And then we have entertainment, which is often quite a passive experience. But then play is something that doesn't come up much, except perhaps in sports. And play, by definition, unless you're a professional, is something that you do for its own sake, for no other outcome than the pleasure of doing it. And that doesn't have to be improv, but that's an example of one. And it can be a very refreshing place to be.
One thing I've really loved about your improv classes, because I've tried others as well, and there's just something about what you do that completely stands out to me. And one thing that I really like is how you actually get us to dive into the body to be able to access qualities and aspects of being human that we maybe didn't think of off the bat. So can you maybe explain the value of the body just overall in improv, and then how that feeds into the rest of our lives?
Yeah. I started off by saying that one of the places we get stuck is when we get stuck in our heads. There's even the phrase for it, right? Being stuck in my head. Like, which in therapy talk would be like a freeze or a startle response.
Yeah.
And getting into the body is undoing that freeze response. And in improv, it can be a great way to discover something new, to find a way to surprise yourself that's not come from your thought processes, which tend to just take you to things you already know. So we use the body both to loosen up and get out of a startle or freeze response, but also to take us into not knowing, and then through the not knowing into something completely fresh and new and exciting. And the same can be true in our own lives as well. That was the second part, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When we're nervous or anxious or overthinking things, we get stuck and disconnected from ourselves and disconnected from other people. And feeling the body is a way of reconnecting with ourselves and our own responses. Like, how do I actually feel right now? And also a way of feeling the impact of someone who you're with. So that's how you feel the connection of the person that you're with. And these are all things we practice in improv, and they're things that I've found enriching in my own life as well.
Mm. A couple of my favorites, sort of, I don't know if they're called principles in improv, but like ideas that we play with, that I just find to be really powerful life teachings. One of them is yes and, so accepting what is there as opposed to blocking and resisting. And the other one is bring a brick, not a cathedral. So could you maybe explain those to the listeners and where you see value in them? And then I'll share my reflections if there's anything as well.
Yeah, cool. So, yeah, the most famous kind of phrase around improv is yes and, or sometimes people say accept and build. I often phrase it as yin and yang. So yin being more accepting and yang being offering something, or related to leading and following in partner dance. To allow a game or a scene to flow well, we want to be relaxed enough to accept something new from our scene partner that isn't necessarily what we thought was going to happen, but instead of making our normal defensive response of no, stop, no, it's not that, but actually just letting go and rolling with it helps make scenes work better in improv. And also helps life roll in interesting directions, where we can practice letting go of a no, which comes from a discomfort rather than not wanting to. So, hey, Andy, do you want to go out tonight? I'm not really sure. And it's not that I don't want to, but I'm just kind of taking time to adjust to something new. And rolling with that that's where a lot of fun happens, and can be quite a deep practice in itself. You know, how many meetings at work do people get into where really all they do is arrive with an idea and then spend the next hour defending their idea, and then it's the end of the meeting, rather than, for example, taking each person's idea one at a time and having 10 minutes to roll with that idea and see how far it can get, and then perhaps choose.
I love that, building on it.
Yeah. A writer friend of mine helped me with my writing once, and she said, you have to separate your writing process from your editing process. So first of all, write loads and then edit it. But if you try and write a bit and edit while you're writing, you're going to get stuck. And yet that's what we often do in meetings, in life, in discussions, is we're judging and creating at the same time, which always jams things up and gets stuck. The yes and part is the creative part. And sure, we can judge and think about it afterwards, but to keep that as a separate process can be really helpful. Yeah, and the bring a brick, not a cathedral, I love that as well, because it's about how much responsibility we sometimes feel that we have to take to figure everything out in advance before we can take a step. Like if someone wants to launch their own business or their own podcast, for example, you know, we can sometimes get stuck feeling that we have to know all the answers before we can do something.
Yeah.
And it can be liberating to get, okay, I can just take one step and I will get some response from that. And then I can take another step and get a response back from that, which is what happens in scenes and in improv, but then that's also like quite a helpful attitude in real life.
Yeah, because everything in life happens in relationship and in interaction. And when we come in thinking our set plan is going to be foolproof and then someone comes in and moves something around, it's like, oh, what now? Yeah. And so there's this flexibility of here's what I'm bringing, but also the other person will bring something and then we'll figure it out from there.
Yeah. And that's that interplay, working with that interplay gets you to more interesting places. And if it was, say it was in a conversation, it gets you to more interesting places. If it was a business, it gets you to a more useful place, because the most common mistake people make, right, is in starting their own project or their own business, is projecting out what they think people will want. And then they've created this whole thing in their minds about how things should be. And then they finally, a year later, take it to the world and go, ta-da, here it is. And the world's like, oh, well, I didn't really, that's not what we wanted. And it can be so much more useful to progress in little steps in that way and co-create.
Yeah. And one other thing that you always remind us of that I love is how the interesting stuff is in relationships and in the interaction and then the dynamic. And that's changed how I look at people in general and how I notice things in relationship. I wonder if that's had an impact on how what has that shifted for you personally?
I feel like we're having quite a serious conversation, which is quite funny for me. which is fine. I'm just noticing it. It's helped me have more fun with people, for sure, and to find what's joyful in a relationship and go from there, you know, to allow things to flow a bit more than I would have done perhaps in the past. I think I would have in the past been quite, and I still am a bit, quite like, okay, I have to have a plan. I'm going to make the plan, and then success means ticking all the things off the plan. That means that it's worked. I'm now much happier to be surprised and be to appreciate things that might have come that I wasn't expecting, and to be open to that.
Yeah, I found for me what's shifted is that I'm so much more aware in my interactions of the space in between, if you will. So I feel like sometimes when we're interacting with someone, each person is in their own skin and it just in their own internal experience. And I'm a lot more aware of not just what's going on in me and what's going on in the other person, but also there's something dynamic going on in between that I feel like I'm experiencing the richness of more fully. So I've been loving that.
Great.
And to maybe shift the seriousness of the conversation, what if, because guys, for those of you listening,
it's funny. I often get quite serious because like when we do improv, I'm mainly messing around.
Yeah.
But it's funny, I've got a serious side as well, but that's why it's been so good for me actually to cultivate a lighter, more joyful side as well.
And I think it's also why you're so good at teaching it, because there isn't that, like when we walk into the space or the virtual space where you teach, there isn't that feeling of, oh, let's just, you know, goof off the whole time. There's a feeling of, okay, no, we're all a bunch of humans, all with our own reservations, but then times where we feel free and play, and it just feels really welcoming to show up exactly as we are.
Yeah, great. I think I mean, I love my improv teachers, but my struggle as a quite shy, perfectionist, quite academic student was, it was very challenging for me to walk into a space that was really like crazy loud. Oh, let's all jump up and down. And I was like, whoa. So, yeah, I hope to address that when I'm teaching and to try and help people find the freedom and sense of safety inside themselves that means that they can gradually begin to loosen up rather than pushing it too hard.
Yeah, it is funny because I feel like we've never had this serious of a conversation in the months.
I know, it's weird, isn't it? Yeah. It's like talking about comedy is famously a very serious business.
It is, because there's so much life wisdom in it. Like it feels like we're playing around, but then sometimes I'm struck by how profound it all is.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And there's a dichotomy that we assume in most cultures I'm familiar with that serious is the same as important and silly is the same as unimportant. And actually, that's not true. We can be joyful and silly and playful in very important ways. You know, look how many people are suffering with loneliness these days. Enormous numbers. And that comes with a health cost and an emotional well-being cost. And part of that is how we separate ourselves through being only serious. And actually it can be so connecting and healing for people to be able to connect with their childlike free selves again. And that could be, if you did it with enough people, it would literally save lives, you know? So there's the etymology of the word silly. I find it interesting because it originally meant innocent. So I suppose a bit like a child is innocent, we might say. They're not self-criticizing and so on. And then by association, it came to sometimes mean holy as well. And there's something, something I find quite helpful in that, in realizing that. I know Anne Lamott, the writer, says laughter is carbonated holiness. Which I really like as a thing to remember. I'm not religious, but I like the sentiment.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I don't know that we can do improv justice in an audio format, but maybe we can give people a bit of a demo. I still want to encourage everyone listening to actually try it because that's just a whole other level of magic. But maybe you can put me on the spot and we can do something here and play with it.
Yeah, sure. It's a practice in listening and letting go and that yin-yang yes and practice. So we'll tell a story together.
I normally come in and I'm like happy to play, but doing it on a recorded version is a whole other level of interesting.
Right, isn't it? And sorry, I keep veering back into making serious points, but it's only because there are so many that, it's the practice of being seen as well, right? Mm-hmm. Being seen when we don't know. Most of us are happy to be seen in our expert subject or doing something that we know very well. Mm-hmm. And actually, it's a step to go, we're going to record something that's going to go out to Aisha's millions of listeners. And we don't know what's going to happen. And
we're about to find out together.
Yeah. So this is where we remember something that we did together. We'll go to a place and each of us, instead of that, our only job is to not contradict facts that have been established already.
Yeah.
So instead of, we had an ice cream. No, we didn't have an ice cream. We had jelly babies. We're going to go, yes, we did have an ice cream. And this is what happened next.
Mm-hmm.
The process is quite interesting. I suggest let's start with something quite normal. And
okay.
Take it from there.
All right. Let's try
a place that we went. Remember when we went to?
Okay. Andy, remember when we went to the plant shop?
Yes, and we bought some cactuses for your mother.
Yeah, and then I pricked my hands and started crying and wailing.
Yes, and the shop owner was so concerned that he called the ambulance.
Yeah, and I refuse to get in the ambulance because I have a car phobia.
Yes, and so then they had to call the emergency hypnotherapist to deal with your car phobia to get you into the ambulance.
Yeah, and I just kept crying and wailing as people gathered around me.
Yes, and then that was when the local TV turned up.
Yes, and then amidst my tears, you were showing them the cactus we bought.
Yes, and that was when they decided that I must be a cactus expert.
Yes, and that's when they invited you to that that TV show where they invite all the plant experts.
Yes, and that was where I had to do a speech about rubber plants without knowing anything about them.
Yeah, and you kept going and talking about them for like 17 minutes.
I know, and that was when the host kept trying to do that sign with his finger across his neck to say, stop now, and I just kept going.
Yeah, and you actually went wilder and wilder with it and kept discussing things in more details as if you actually knew.
Yes, I just got more and more enthusiastic about the subject. I decided to actually become a genuine expert in plants.
Yeah, and then you talked about all the medicinal value that you can extract from a cactus plant.
Yes, and that was when we discovered that it can also cure phobias.
Yes, and that's when you left the studio and came back to me running with a cactus in your hand.
Yes, and I said, oh my goodness, Aisha, I finally figured it out. We need to inject you with the cactus.
Yes, and then as I was crying, you injected me with the cactus, even though I already had cactus thorns in my hands.
Yes, and when I'd injected you on the opposite side to your original thorns and they balanced out, your phobia went away.
Yes, and then I was mad at you for leaving me and going to a TV show while I cried on the streets.
Yes, and I apologized very much for that, but tried to draw your attention to the potential happy ending. The end.
So for someone listening who's like, what is going on with these two people creating a story? How would you break that down? Like, because for us as people who are experiencing it, I can feel a shift in my mood already. But I wonder for someone listening who's like, huh? What went on there?
It's the process of letting go. It's the process of coming into the present and being delighted by surprise rather than resistant to it. And repeatedly as we went back and forth. It's like each time, of course, you don't know where my mind is. So kind of anything that you do or say and anything I do or say is going to slightly surprise the other person. And it's the practice of stepping joyfully into the unknown and finding what may happen on the other side. And to my mind, we ended up with something far more creative and interesting than if we said, hey, let's think of a story. How should we start the story? Oh, well, why don't we start the story like this? Oh, I'm not sure about that, which is the normal way, right?
Yeah.
In our judging, self-editing minds. And actually, when we can just practice diving in and allow ourselves to be carried away on the flow of the moment, then we arrive at something completely, completely unexpected, completely new.
Hmm.
And it's fun to do. It's fun. It's 10 times more fun to do than to watch. I think it's quite important for
listeners. Absolutely.
You know, it's like skateboarding or something. You know, you can watch someone skateboarding and go, oh, that's nice. But to actually skateboard, of course, that's a much bigger experience.
Yeah. I think a lot of the time people want to build skills and they do that in ways that feel like, I don't want to say the word academic, but like very process based. Whereas this is a practice of playing with creativity and inspiration in a joyful and lighthearted way.
Yes. And knowing that the inspiration isn't something that we chase, it's something that's inside us and is in the moment. That's where we need to practice looking. I often compare it sometimes to meditation as well, because the same things happen, that when we meditate, we can find great joy and eternal possibility in the moment. And then we start thinking and, you know, rationalizing and we lose it again. And it's the same thing when we practice improvisation, that when we find ourselves there in the present, and we can let go and surrender to the moment and take a willing step deeper into the moment, then we go somewhere really interesting and joyful and fun. If we start planning, thinking about it, judging what we're doing, then we get all caught up and we get stuck. And if we start planning ahead, what would be really good is if in a few minutes' time this happened, we get stuck again. And so it's always bringing our attention back to where's the joy in the moment. That's where the riches lie.
Absolutely. And two things that also stand out to me. One is that we're playing with all of this in a safe, risk-free environment. Like, a lot of people struggle to find this in life, and it's like, well, play in the safe container, and then once that skill is already there of already tapping into what exists within you, it's so much easier to then replicate that. And I forgot my other and now it's gonna come back in a second, but also I lost it, it'll come back.
well can I add something to your talk about safety? I think that is so important, because it's one thing to go, hey, everyone, like, be free. But many people don't feel safe to be free.
Right.
They don't feel safe to be seen. That's why we build these defensive kind of walls around us. And creating safety is the foundation of the freedom. Certainly... I try very hard to make it safe, and because it's those defensive walls are there for a reason, right? In people, if someone listening recognizes, oh yeah, I do tend to like overthink, overplan, or whatever, that's there for a reason. And I think it's important to respect that. Taking our armor off is a delicate process and requires us to feel and genuinely be safe. while we're doing it and for that to be solid.
And I remembered the second thing. It's what it's what you mentioned already, but about when we're stuck in habitual ways of thinking and that like path of least resistance, this is where practices like improv can be really powerful in reconnecting us to wider possibilities within us that we've forgotten about.
Yeah, sure. In so many ways. First of all, that being playful and free is one of the first things that we tend to shut ourselves off from.
Yeah.
So that's already an exploration. Mm. And when in improv, we actually get to play at being a whole range of different people. Yeah. So you can be the kind of person who you aren't in real life because we're just playing. Just like children can play at being different kinds of people. So you get to sort of explore those sides of yourself that it wouldn't be appropriate to explore and play with at work or whatever, you know, whatever your situation may be. A lot of improv is shadow work. I don't know if you've noticed this, Aisha, but it's all those parts of ourselves that we cut ourselves off from and say, oh, no, I'm not that. And people often think of shadow as being only sort of dark and menacing aspects of ourselves, but it can also be our free, fun, creative, joyful, playful selves that we, for whatever reason, at some point we decided, oh no, I can't do that. And that's not me. That's for other people to be, not me. And we can reclaim that.
I really love that. And another thing that I've found that improv has kind of supported me in, and this was a very unexpected surprise, but I realized because I'm in a job where I'm connecting with people in the state where they're in that moment, the ability to find it in my body to access different states and be in different sort of aspects of myself and to be able to switch from one to the other has been really powerful for me. So, you know, if I'm like stuck in traffic and then I walk into work and I need to see a client 5 minutes from that, I'm able to shift out of, oh my God, I'm so stressed out by traffic mode into, okay, I'm connected. And then if a client was going through a really hard time, I can actually feel that with them without walling myself off and trying to protect myself and then be there fully with them and then be able to step away and kind of be like, okay, now I'm doing this. And that's just been really powerful for me. I wonder what your reflections are on that.
Well, first of all, that's so great. I'm so happy because people often think of improv as just being extroverts being crazy and funny. And there is such, as we've been exploring, there's this deeper layer, which I see as being about connection, like connection to ourselves and to each other and to the moment.
Yeah.
And being able to have a greater flexibility in who we're being at any one time, have more choice around that. And improv gives us practice in making those choices in a way that perhaps a practice that was more stressing one aspect might give you strength in one direction. So for example, if you're practicing karate, then maybe that would help you in being sort of a bit fierce and a bit determined and whatever, but it probably wouldn't help you much in being playful and fun. But because improv is so free, it actually does open up all kinds of areas where you can switch into different states. And I think connection in itself is so healing. You were just talking about in your work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I find that we're better able to connect to others when we connect, we can connect to all these different states and potential traits within ourselves. Like, you know, I can be the old grumpy lady who works at the flower shop. There's a Lego flower shop right in front of me. So that's what brought that to mind. Or I can be the, you know, very shy, baker or whatever, like to be able to access all these very human things within us when we're playing can enable us to more effectively resonate with others when they tell their stories.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know. I don't know if I'm allowed to ask you a question.
Yes, absolutely. Anyway. Please do.
So when I work as a therapist, I use quite a lot of humor. It would be quite a common thing.
Yeah.
People are quite surprised because they're coming in with some serious thing that they're worried about. And certainly quite often we'll be laughing about the circumstance or the craziness of being human or whatever. Mm. And I find that to be often a very healing thing for people.
Yeah.
And actually, once someone starts laughing about their situation, there's already a little bit of space.
Absolutely.
And already, it's a good sign for me. I'm like, oh, yeah, there's a bit of wiggle room here.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering if what you've been noticing around that, around humor, whether improv's helped you with that or just humor in therapy in general, laughter.
Yeah, I think so. In terms of improv, I feel like I came into improv already with a lot of comfort and freedom and looseness and playing. Yeah. So for me, that humor I already appreciated, and improv has just enabled me to refine my connection to it. So to me, that's been the joy of improv, is that refining and that nuance and definitely appreciating the dynamic more. That, I think, has been deeply enriched for me through improv. But going back to humor, 1,000,000%. For me, it varies with each client. I think with some clients, we laugh more than others, and it just depends on where they're at. And it just happens organically, like it just comes. And like you said, for me as well, whenever they laugh and that comes into the equation, I'm like, we're getting somewhere. You know, there's space to see things from a different perspective. So absolutely, I love humor in the therapy room. Sometimes they joke with me and sometimes it comes from my side, and it really depends on that dynamic, but I always find it to be extremely powerful.
Yeah.
And I'm just reflecting personally as well, even with what we've talked about in terms of state shifting, just a few days ago when we lost a very loved one in our family, I found it so beautiful that I could cry and be really upset and then laugh about a joke 2 minutes later and then cry 10 minutes later if I needed to, and then laugh and make jokes. And for those two things to coexist, for me to be able to delight in some aspects of life and also feel the pain of loss and the amount of caring I have towards that lost connection, there's something really healing about that coexistence of different states. And I think improv is a beautiful way to explore that within ourselves.
Yeah. And if we numb one emotion, we numb them all.
Yeah.
So, for example, a willingness to be with grief and sadness can be the same willingness that allows you to be with laughter and joy.
Mm.
And for sure, many of us, as a way of staying safe, can make our world a little bit smaller when we shy away from feelings and fear or anger or sadness or joy or laughter. And it can be a healthy thing to be able to safely and with choice choose to be able to experience things more fully.
Mm-hmm.
Not all the time, because we're not 3 years old, but when the moment is right.
Absolutely. There's a freedom in that, and being able to feel safe feeling these different states and knowing that we can skillfully navigate them. One thing I want to also touch on is the power of the non-verbal. So I know the demo we did is quite maybe verbal and word-based because people are listening to us. But a lot of what we play with in improv is there's so much in the nonverbal aspect of things. And we know that even with researchers, when they do this research about communication, 70%, I think, of communication is nonverbal. And so Where does that play into improv in your experience?
If you asked me how my day was and I crossed my arms and said, oh, it was brilliant. Thank you very much, Aisha. Absolutely great. I'm guessing your conclusion about my day would be that it wasn't brilliant at all. And I'm being sarcastic, right? We can lie verbally, but non-verbally is where our truth comes out. And that's the beautiful, joyful thing in improv, is the truth. And that often comes out non-verbally. So just a look, or someone being shocked, or a physical reaction can be so interesting because it's true. And I think the second part to that is, because we work online and we do improv online, there's a risk. There's a risk in our lives in general these days being far too heady, far too static, sitting at computers just using words. And so I particularly try to loosen that up and reconnect people. And particularly around improv, I couldn't imagine doing it sitting down for myself. I would just find myself too stuck in my head. So the connection with the body brings us back to our wholeness and our humanity, and it's there and the moment. And that's where improvisation lives, is in the moment. Yeah, I use the body a lot, both in warm-ups and in when we're playing and in discovering something new.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think I forgot to tell you this. I actually now record my episode intros for the podcast standing, and it makes a huge difference because I never prepare them. Like, I just turn the mic on and I'm like, okay, this episode was blah, blah, blah. And I find that I don't get stuck like I used to when I started, now that I'm standing and shuffling around as I process.
Yeah. We're sitting down now, but... You know, when I teach, I'm always standing up. And when I coach, I usually coach standing up as well. For the same reason. It helps me connect to my body. It stops me locking up. It helps me feel and stay fluid. And, you know, those are all good things.
If you were interviewing yourself, what question would you ask?
That's cheating, surely.
That is cheating.
If I was interviewing myself, oh, no, I'm going to go down a massive rabbit hole now. Could you give me at least some kind of, you know...
Framework?
Creativity thrives within constraints.
Yes, absolutely.
Give me some kind of direction, otherwise it's so broad. Like, interviewing myself about...
Something about improv and the way it connects you to... possibly your resilience or...
Yeah. So if the question was, how has improv helped your resilience? It actually has a lot. One thing I notice is I am very good with things going wrong. If computer breaks down, or if I'm teaching, if the projector's not working, or there's no flip chart, or... I've been sent to the wrong room. I have become very good at dealing with the problem here and now without freaking out about it. And I think people who work with me notice that. They go, oh, yeah, he's really good at dealing with what's here rather than the common thing, right? It was like, oh, no, if this has happened, that means that will happen, and that means that and that and that and that. When we get ourselves stuck, I've gotten much better at going, okay, so my... computers crashed 5 minutes before a session. Okay, what should we do? So that's been really helpful in that way.
Cool. And what gives you joy, or what excites you?
I'm going to give you two answers, one around improv and one not around improv, that have just come into my mind.
Yeah.
And, you know, I feel it's in the spirit of the thing to just kind of go with an impulse. So around improv, what gives me the most joy is when... I see people surprising themselves and being delighted with it. So My tagline is like the delight of surprising yourself. Mm. And when I see that happening and I see people in classes and they've arrived with a whole load of baggage about, oh, I can't do this and et cetera, et cetera. And within an hour, something's happened and they've gone, oh my God, I've just found something in myself that I didn't know was there.
Yeah.
And I've surprised myself, and that's just wonderful. Outside of improv, the thing that came to my mind was I live in a flat, so I don't have a garden as such, but I've got a balcony, quite a big balcony, so I always grow lots of plants on the balcony. And I was just tidying them up yesterday because it's autumn in England now, so most of them were dying and it was time to clear them away. And I just love going out and looking after them and seeing how they're doing and reconnecting to even just a small part of nature in that way. I love that. And that's so therapeutic. And, you know, when I'm just kind of, there's only a few pots, so like it only takes 5 minutes, but like checking in on them almost.
Yeah.
Is a very... very grounding thing. It's interesting, you know, we say grounding and they live in the ground and very earthy kind of thing. So that would be a non-improv thing that brings me joy.
I love that. For someone who is ready now and convinced to explore improv, where and how can they find you?
Best thing to do to find me is to come to my website, which is playconnect.co.uk. And if you join the email list, what I often do is run taster classes where, as I was just describing, well, usually it's about 2 hours. Within that time, people go from thinking, I could never do this, and often feeling quite nervous. And we totally acknowledge that and start from there. Within an hour, people are amazed at what they're discovering and that's just a beautiful thing. So the best thing to do is sign up on my email list. I don't have any scheduled right now, but when I do, then I'll let you know.
Thank you so much, Andy. This was an absolute delight.
Thank you for listening and for being a part of these conversations. If you found what you've listened to useful or interesting in any way, please remember to share it with your loved ones, with anyone who you feel would benefit from this content as well. I would also love and appreciate it if you took a moment to give this podcast a rating on iTunes and possibly even a review, mainly because it's good for my ego, but in all seriousness, because reviews help more people find the podcast and therefore expand the conversation even further. Thanks again for listening, and I look forward to sharing more episodes with you really soon.